Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids of all ages and all stages for mental health issues. It could be for a referral, parent support group. We even have a WhatsApp group for moms of parents that are struggling with their children, whether it's drugs, alcohol, whether they have a yeshiva issue, off derech, whatever it may be, please call our confidential helpline and we will help guide you to the right person, the right therapist, the right rehab, the right clinic for all mental health issues. But let's not wait until you need a rehab. Let's call early for prevention. Call when your kids are in elementary school. You may see some red flags. They may be struggling, whether it's ADD, ADHD, depression, maybe there's anxiety around test taking, or whatever the issue may be. Let's focus on elementary age children so that we have prevention in place. So we have less issues when they develop into teenagers and going into high school. So anyone that wants a referral, feel free to call our confidential helpline at 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and that is 718-758-0400. And if you want or know someone that would want to get a free kit, a naloxone kit for prevention of opioid overdose, please call us and we can arrange it even to have somebody train you in your own home. It's very short training. We will give you a free kit. So maybe you want to write our number down for yourself, your loved one. Maybe it's for a neighbor or someone you sit next to in shul. Our number again is 718-758-0400. Tonight, we have with us the Director of Training and in William Allison White Institute, and that is no other than Seth Aronson, who has a...
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Side D, I'd like to welcome you on with us tonight. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to do this. I think MASC is such a valuable resource and organization for the community, so thanks very much for this opportunity.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you on our show tonight as well. Thank you for making the time. I know how busy you are being the professor of Long Island in Long Island University and pastoral counseling at Yeshiva Chovevei Torah. You've got a full plate, but we really want to hear from you about what you have to share about when faced with tragedies such as the Jersey City tragedy that everyone just, faced such terrible, terrible, sad. There are no words for such a traumatic event, and we need to know how to respond, what the messages are, to communicate to children, and it's important that parents know, the different responses. So I want to just say that our hearts go out to all the families that were affected in the Jersey City tragedy, the police officer, the employee's family, the families, the owners of the store, Williamsburg, Jersey City. We're all there with you, and we want to be able to help parents with the right words, the right emotions to have, the right communication skills to put into place when children talk to you. So let's get right to it. How would you like me to address you, please?
Oh, Seth is fine.
Seth, thank you. Yeah. Okay. Seth, right before we do talk about that, I want to just say it was wonderful being with you at the NEFESH conference. Hundreds of therapists this past weekend, from Wednesday night until Sunday, late in the day, trained. I mean, we trained them hard. I'm a board member for NEFESH, and I must say I came home so exhausted, and I can imagine how hard it was for therapists that had to sit through from early morning, early morning until late, maybe 11 at night. Many, many therapists went all straight through the day for trainings to get their C credits, and which is important that therapists stay on top of their credits, their training. So I know you presented there. It was wonderful. We got great feedback from your presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, and how did you feel about the conference?
It was
wonderful.
How
was it for you?
It was wonderful. It was a terrific experience for me, and I have to say, I had a large group in my workshop, and it was a really lovely, thoughtful group. I heard from a number of people afterwards who said, we'd like more information, and I always leave the door open. If you have any other questions, please be in touch with me. People have, which has been really, it's very rewarding for me. So it was a very rewarding experience for me as well.
Excellent. So we were very happy to have you. We hope you'll come back again. And it's always wonderful to have such high-quality presentations on our radio show. So thank you for making the time. So, Seth, let's get right to it. What are some of the expected responses to a traumatic event in general, please?
Yeah. So, I think we have to think about any experience or event that is a threat to a child's sense of safety and security, that it feels like it could be potentially unmanageable or overwhelm them, is something that we have to think about. And I think also with the Jersey City event, in the same way that things like 9/11 were a threat to safety and security, it affected everybody. Sometimes, let's say, God forbid, something happens in a school, so it's about the kids in the school. But this affected all of us. I mean, we all were absolutely impacted and affected by this situation. And that's important because it means that the parents have to think about their own response to such an event in order to also be able to help their children. So that's one thing that I think is really significant to consider. Now, I think another thing to think about, and it doesn't mean all kids are going to have this response, but there are kind of normative responses, normal responses to such an event. Those could include, and again, it doesn't mean every child is going to experience this, but it could include things like there are three clusters, really, of reactions to trauma, and I think this is a trauma, this is a tragedy, to think about what these three clusters, if they're presenting in any child. So one is a way of re-experiencing the event. Now, that could include having a bad dream, in which, the child doesn't even have a bad dream about the event, but it could be about something else. Or they might experience some kind of, potentially flashback or any kind of distress when they're exposed to a clue or a cue that is related to the event. So, for example, you're going shopping in a store in your own neighborhood, and the child might be fearful about going into the store, which is a normal response on the part of a child or even an adult. So that's one set of behaviors that we sometimes might see as a result of, being exposed to some kind of event. A second is avoidance. And sometimes kids, again, will be fearful afterwards, and that the avoidance might be, I don't want to leave the house, You might want to send your child to the store to run an errand. They say, I don't want to go to the store. So it could be actual physical avoidance or withdrawal. Sometimes that avoidance is even mental, and I mean that psychological in the sense that they might seem a little bit spacey or their minds are elsewhere. And that's a way of also kind of not really thinking about what might have occurred. And sometimes if it's an older child, they might report, I'm not interested in doing something, or I don't know why I feel sort of a little bit detached or withdrawn, but that could be another kind of response. And the third set of behaviors just to think about is hyperarousal, being overly aroused, either overly or underly aroused. That could include sleep difficulties. That can include problems attending or concentrating in school. That could also include, this is a very common one, there's a loud noise like a car backfires and the child sort of jumps or is startled. And that, again, is a very normative response to something like this. Now, again, it's not direct one-to-one, but, you know, this was a frightening thing. And so we have to look for ways in which our children might demonstrate some kind of heightened awareness to being frightened or heightened sensitivity to some of that.
And I'm sure there are differences between children of different ages. Parents have to respond differently for younger children, teenage children. So I'm wondering if you can describe some responses that may be helpful for the different ages, please.
Yes, so that's a very important point, Ruhama, that it makes a very big difference. What is the developmental level of the child, the chronological age, because they're going to respond very differently. So for a much younger child, I think what you want to really convey to them is about safety and security and consistency, predictability, because I think their main concern is going to be in the attachment realm about, I want to know that it's safe, I want to know that my family can protect me in that way. So that's with a younger child. I think those are some messages that are very important to pay attention to. With an older child, with a pre-adolescent, with an adolescent, then it becomes they're more able to understand what happened. Doesn't mean they won't have a response to it, but there I think it has to be, okay, you're older, be sensible about these things. So now, yeah, I want you to be more careful when you're going out. Think about where you're going, who you're going with, because they're more independent, obviously. They're at an age where they're going to be more independent. So you want to speak to them at their level, that you want to respect their level of maturity, but also convey to them that you want them to be safe in their own way. With a younger child, it's going to be more about you providing directly that safety. With an adolescent, it's more about, okay, you are more independent, but I want you to make, you know, wise and careful decisions when you're going out and when you're on your own and when you're on the street or with friends or whatever. There are definitely some differences. Regardless of the age of the child or the adolescent, I think parents have to listen very carefully to what their children might be saying, and to pay very close attention to an emotional signal. So an adolescent might not say, you know, mommy or daddy, I'm scared about what happened. But then you might say, oh, they're staying in more, they don't want to go out with friends. What's that about? How can I understand that? How might I talk to them about that? With a younger child, they might be, very common thing, they might be scared of something else entirely. So the fear is displaced onto something else, but really it's about what happened. And so it is about really listening carefully, paying very close attention to your child and your child's need, and then talking to them in a way that they can understand about what happened. Now, this is a very public event. It's all over the news, rightly so. And so then it has to be, well, what does this mean for us? And I think younger children are going to need reassurance. We are going to be there to protect you. We would never let anybody go off on their own. Of course, we're being careful because we're your parents and we love you and we want to protect you. And that message is also for an adolescent, but at the same time, having the adolescent think a little bit about themselves, the self-care that would be involved with an adolescent. But I think the safety and security is really a primary that really has to be conveyed to the child or the adolescent.
I'm just wondering, what might be unique about the event, like in Jersey City, that tragedy? Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, unfortunately, what I think is unique about it is that it was targeted against Jews. And so, you know, I think, you know, again, we want to be realistic. We don't want to frighten our kids, but we want to say, yes, you know, unfortunately, there are people in the world who, you know, they're not around us. I think you want to convey that. And of course, we do everything we can to provide you with the safety and security. But it also means that, yes, we have to be a little bit more careful and think, you know, because we don't want to frighten our kids, but we also want to make them cognizant that, yes, they have to be careful. Unfortunately, that is a very prominent feature of what happened.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot of attacks, whether it's overseas, whether it's local in Crown Heights, whether it's Williamsburg, just locally. And so it's not just one incident. It's unfortunately going on so many, on the train, on the streets. So it can be very emotionally devastating to some kids that may have underlying anxiety, underlying depression. So when would you suggest that somebody consult a professional?
Okay, so some of the things that I'm describing are very normal responses to a traumatic event. And I think if a parent is able to, and again, that's why I said at the beginning, the thing to think about is we as adults think about what happened. We have our own responses. It's very important to kind of get on top of that so we can provide the safety and security for our kids so that they don't see us as anxious, nervous wrecks about this. I think that's actually really critical. But even with that, I mean, if a child is continuing to experience those kinds of fears that I'm describing or reactions or behaviors, and they're going on now for some time, and I would say, you know, a few weeks after the event, it's still going on, then it might be worth talking to somebody. Again, we're not talking about a longer-term thing, and it might be a very short-term intervention, but these reactions are normal. They're very normal. But we don't want them to be prolonged. When they're prolonged already, then it's kind of tapping into some other anxiety or fear in the child. And then it might be the right time to consult with a professional.
So it's so important that we realize that having the courage to pick up the phone and consult with professionals does not have to be a long, you know, drawn-out 25 sessions.
Correct.
Some, it could be that the parent goes so that they learn how to speak to their children. And then for some, if it's bedwetting, if it's, you know, anxiety going to the grocery, like you mentioned, or whatever, it could be a very short-term kind of idea to deal with. And I want my listeners to know that there's play therapy. And play therapy is so... it's amazing to watch even what happens during the play therapy and how helpful it can be with young kids. I'm wondering if you'd like to expand on that a little, please, the benefit.
Sure. I think it could be enormously beneficial. And again, just as you said, it doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out process. I remember, this is a different traumatic event, but there was one little boy, he was four, and that I saw, and... he was standing with his older sisters on a curb, and a car jumped the curb and went over him. So he wasn't hit by the car. He was knocked down, and the car went over him. He was terrified about going out, and, you know, his mother brought him in to see me, and he did a couple of things in play right away. First of all, he didn't tell me this happened. Here's what he did. He took two cars. He smashed them together. This is what he was playing pretty much over and over again. And he also did a very unusual thing. He lifted up his shirt to show me that he had bruises on his chest because he was thrown down on his stomach, which was, of course, pretty shocking for me to see that. But that was his way of saying, okay, this is what's going on. So, but one of the things then I did ask him about what had happened. He told me he was terrified about going out. And so what we decided to do together with his mom is that we would go for a walk outside. He was terrified of cars. And could he just, like, you know, after touch a car. And at the beginning he didn't want to do it. He flinched. But we both showed him, oh, this is a parked car. It's not going anywhere. We, you know, we wanted him to get used to that. And then he could come back into my office and play with cars, not in a way in which they're smashing into each other, but in a, you know, in a way that kids play with cars, you know, going up and down tracks and to the store and so on. And it doesn't have to be a long thing. It can be a way in which the child becomes used to it. And they're playing out what, I mean, he was playing out right away what his fears were. He also had the startle, heightened startle response that I was talking about. He heard a car horn. He was terrified. But this was a way of just a few sessions, gradually getting him used to going out, not being frightened of all cars, not thinking this is going to happen to him again. And this, it's really kind of, you know, magic almost, the way kids will communicate that in play.
So I do want everyone to know, all my listeners, that therapy doesn't only have to happen in an office, on a couch, or a chair opposite the therapist. There are ways of doing therapy outside the box. So that's very important. Not everybody does well in a formal setting. Just like kids that have to take a test, sometimes they have such high anxiety, and there are arrangements made to do it orally, verbally, in the principal office at another time, less anxiety. So there are ways to work it, and we need to recognize that young children today are watching their parents talk, they're listening, they hear about the responses of the tragedy, they're watching them watch it on whether TV, internet, on their cell phones, they're listening to the parents on their regular phones, talking to friends and relatives, and everyone is talking about the tragedy and other tragedies that have happened, and in other communities. And in general, it's quite fearful, and we really need to train ourselves to be able to have good responses so that our kids will get affected less and they're able to communicate what their feelings are. Can you just quickly maybe describe some of the red flags that we should be watching out for, again, for those that may have just came in and listening, red flags of young children, please.
So if they're really terrified, if they're withdrawing from normal activities, if they're really heightened in their arousal and their startle response, those are some, if their sleep is disturbed, or you mentioned bedwetting is another possibility, or they're just saying, I don't want to go into that store. They're associating things with the tragedy. And absolutely, Ruhama, it's really important that the parents, that we know our responses, because we have to be the safety and the secure basis for our children. If we can communicate that, then they won't have as difficult a response to this, to an event like this, to such a tragic event like this.
Very tragic. Young children left without a mother, a father, with spouses being affected, extended family. I mean, it's just tragic. My heart goes out to all the families. So again, what are some important messages you'd like to communicate to a child following such an event, please?
That we're going to do our best to protect them, to be safe figures, that we're not going to communicate as best as we can our anxiety to them. And you're absolutely right. Children are very, very attuned. They hear their parents on the phone. They hear what parents are saying. So we have to be very careful about the messages that we communicate, what we talk about in front of them, what we don't talk about in front of them. And just to be very attuned to them and pay attention, because even if they're not saying it, they might be communicating their fear, their anxiety in their behavior in some other displaced emotional way. So to just be very attuned to that, I think that's very important.
Right, and we need to maintain regular structure and routines because kids do get very nervous, and by a parent, you know, sitting and watching the TV, let's say, and it's separate time, that also could make a child feel very, you know, full of anxiety because the regular routines are not being followed.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things we said after 9/11 to a lot of people is turn off the television. So the news was kept showing this over and over again. Turn off the television. They don't have to listen to the news. They don't have to hear that all the time.
Absolutely. So, again, lack of energy, nausea, headaches suddenly, vomiting suddenly, not wanting to go to the grocery, being scared when the mom says or the dad that they're going to the grocery. Watch your kid's reaction. See how they are. And I do just want to say, Seth, that, you know, we get families that call us when a parent or a child dies young or in a family and they have young children and they need some therapists to come in, and they always call us, and we provide families during the Shiva, the 7 days, with therapists. We collaborate with other organizations, and I do want to say that there are many, many, many times that parents say, oh, my child doesn't need therapy. They look okay. She's laughing. She's with her friends. He's okay. His friends come every day. He looks okay. But years later, when we interview young adults, married even, that are self-medicating or, you know, having other issues, and when we interview them and they say, well, I really never got a chance to deal with the trauma, the tragedy in my family when I was young, they all kept saying, oh, I look okay. They didn't know I wasn't okay. So what's an important message, please, for my listeners? We're going to close up now. For my listeners to know, please.
Open communication, I think, is the important message. So no matter what the event is, if it's, God forbid, the loss of a child or a parent, you talk about it. You keep the lines of communication open. Too many people will say, oh, no, we're not going to talk about it, or the child seems fine, so we're not going to talk about it. The more the communication is open, the more there's a way of building a really lovely memory of that person. And the message to the child is, you can talk about this. You can come to me with a question or a fear or a feeling at any time. So keep the lines of communication open.
Thank you. We have Seth Aronson, the Director of Training at William Allison White Institute. And I want to thank you for being on tonight. Let's always share good news. Thank you, Seth.
Amen. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And keep up all the wonderful work at Mass.
Thank you. Amen. And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. Let's only hear good news. And always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Thank you.
Evan Zahav Jerusalem Gold Wines, when only the best will do, will enhance your Hanukkah experience. The Evan Zahav Special Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot is their flagship wine, with grapes grown in unique vineyards at the base of the Shiloh River and the slopes of Mount Bracha. The combination of the three grape varieties grown in this unique terrain creates an impressive wine with a dark red opaque hue, and a combination of tantalizing aromas including black cherry, Belgian chocolate, and fresh early anise. This wine has been aged 24 months in French and American oak barrels. Other Evan Zahav wines include their premium Cabernet Sauvignon from Nahal Shiloh and Givat Neely with wild berry, vanilla, and tobacco aromas. Evan Zahav Premium Merlot with 10 months of aging in oak gives the wine a full body with sweet wild berries and herbal spices. Evan Zahav Premium Shiraz is a full body wine with red cherries, blackberries, smoked meat, exotic herbal spice aroma. Evan Zahav Cabernet Sauvignon is characterized by remarkable flavors, aromas, and scents, and has a deep red hue and a blackberry aroma. The Evan Zahav Petit Shiraz is produced under impeccable conditions and boasts unique aromas and scents. Evan Zahav Jerusalem Gold Winery, a Kosher Fest winner of Best Wines, will add some delicious flavor to your Hanukkah meals. Try Evan Zahav.